let's go on then to the next one. And I believe now we have Christopher Monroe talking about Wikipedia.
So we all know the great promise that the suit on mine holds for the future in the area of women and beekeeping. So I really don't even know, what else I can do. But it's very hard for me to say anything articulate, but both because my admiration for the Suda Online is boundless, and I can't imagine anybody writing a better piece on it than the one Ian has written, so I almost sit down now that I couldn't have trouble writing that. The Suda Online invented the present, many years ago. What's now called crowdsourcing, according to my, was it Geektionary or Geekopedia? What is it Wired sends you? If you Wired magazine, a little supplement they send you. It's like Geekopedia, something like that. I don't understand the term. It's crowdsourcing. But it's the Suda Online, a collaborative creation of a resource. And it anticipated the wiki and anticipated all the criticisms of the wiki. The Suda Online was not an anything goes free for all, but is in fact very carefully, though not rigidly, controlled by wise editors translating this resource. In many other ways, I remember the Suda Online being remarkable in that, and these are things that don't actually necessarily make it into Anne's article, but I want to praise them. I remember it was the first scholarly publication of any kind that I'd ever seen that assumed first that citations would be to online resources. When you do your Suda translation and do your commentary, the very first thing you had the opportunity to do was link to text on persons. And then after that, if you couldn't, you could type them in. But that was clearly deprecated. I thought that was an admirable innovation. Anne's paper, I think, addresses particularly well. It's the perfect paper on this subject because it instructs about the nature of the source. It explains why it was worth putting through this collaborative electronic ringer. How that has been a profit, what the limitations are to it. Basically, it tells somebody everything they need to know, including so what. And I really wish I had read this article a long time ago, because everything I've ever written about any other project would have been better. But the thing I admire most about is that Anne's paper addresses the most snarky category of criticism against a project like the Suda Online, which is one like, well, why bother translating this, right?
That's the one you're all
about. Yeah, I mean, really serious people are just going to read it in Greek, because we're all, have big hairy chests and just read Greek all the time. And we have endless amounts of time. We all know what all the words mean. I think, this article points out the main reason to translate is because often the Greek in the Suda is wrong, and it's stupid, and it says incorrect stuff. And so by translating, this is just terrific. It's a primary source, and our primary sources were often written by idiots. And this is
the secondary sources have never been written.
That's right. It's like if they need peer review. We all know that ensures perfect clarity and revealed truth. But I think this is something I certainly plan to remember. That to say in the face of snarky criticism, that I think this often our discipline hides behind our failure to translate things. Our vast untranslated quotations of Latin and Greek are a very convenient rug under which to sweep a bunch of loose ends and potential objections. And so, apart from its kind of populism and the fact that it's cool and that it's this cutting-edge technological innovation, I think the Pseudo Online is on a very firm foundation for insisting that we put our money where our mouth is and say what we actually believe this stuff to mean and have the opportunity to correct it under each other's gaze. And then the other issue, and this sort of goes along with all the topics worth mentioning, the topics that we've been talking about here, and I think the one where I know my projects are the projects I work with that are at the most risk is that one of the reasons I think that the Pseudo Online has been so successful is the dedication of a vast amount of time on the part of its editors. They have stuck with it. And I am bad not to stick with things. And I think a lot of us in this room have this tendency too. As Greg said, we go on to do the next stuff. We go on to work on the next project, build the next cool thing. And one of the things that makes the Pseudo Online so remarkable is that the editors have stuck with it. And mentioned that in the article that there is the matter of its scope. It's a large but finite text, so you can have these happy intermediate milestones, the first 100 entries, first half, whatever. But the fact is, the entire corpus of our text is not that big that we couldn't look at everything similarly. So I'm not sure that's necessarily what separates it out. I think there's a very happy confluence of dedicated talent around that project, which of course we have lost. Thank you. So I'll stop there and let other people say nice things about the Pseudo Online, which I think is all that it deserves.
I actually have a Pseudo story, which is not quite appropriate for the paper, it's eminently appropriate for this audience. Way back at the beginning, when I was translating entries, we had started in those days with, okay, let's start at the beginning of the alphabet. I got alpha number 1 and 2. I think I did the first couple dozen alphas, and somebody did the beginnings of betas and so on. And I turned my way through alphas and got up to Abraham, which is one of the really, really big, long ones, one of the 10 longest entries in there. Way over my head, I know nothing about the Old Testament. Pardon me, whatever, but I did okay. 2 days later, I get an email from Ross saying, Jesus is yours if you want him. I don't know this guy very well at this point, and he's like from Kentucky and grew up in Virginia, and I'm this New England Catholic, and I fired back this very tentative email saying, you realize I'm Catholic, right? And he writes back saying, no, I'll suit up all the time. I ordered 229.
Boost to my career by simply turning some of my Greek students loose on, a few short pseudo entries. And again, the administrators get wind of this and think it's just super. And the kids have a great time. And you never know what kind of crazy stuff they're going to find. But it's hard because it's a goofy pseudo Greek. It is good for undergraduates because it teaches them a bunch of words that they're never going to see anywhere else, like words about Greek grammar and accentuation in Greek. They don't usually dot it at the date of
if I can add how the Pseudo Online project has improved my life, and some of you know this story, but we, in our proposal for Queen of Explain the Age, we pointed at the Pseudo's editorial workflow model specifically as an example of grappling with this perceived tension between the traditional scholarly editorial practice and the crowdsourcing model. And so we wanted to try to emulate this evident success of that with the geographic data. And we had two of the NEH reviewers specifically comment on that aspect as being one of the reasons to view our proposal favorably, is that we were clearly following best models. So it's an icebreaker for us.
The next question is, all right, someday, I'm not too distant, the computer will actually be all translated. It is close, and the entries will get vetted, and over time will get more and more and more vetted, and so on. So what do we do next? I mean, it's, you can think of things like, okay, let's do the same trick with the Scolia to Sophocles, or, you know, figure paper author, or do the same trick with Ptolemy's geography or whatever. But I wonder if there isn't some other larger thing out there someplace that we're reaching towards. And I'm not the sort of person who sees that kind of thing. How about if somebody else points me at it? But there was a piece of Chronicle of Higher Education last month about how the internet is revolutionizing big collaborative science. Yeah, big deal. This has been everyday work to us for years. But is there more big humanities out there that is not just doing the kinds of things that we've always done in print? Is not just, you know, putting together an edition of Aristotle's Sophocles, which we can after all get in a big book or whatever. What is the next sort of next big thing that's going to probably include not just text and not just geography and not just chronology and not just linguistics, somehow all of it?
And if you have a collaborative humanities in a grant, if we thought of something,
then yeah, we'd be doing it.
Another way to do it is that what you have is kind of a home for a lot of, a center for a lot of other things. I mean, that tying this into many other resources can make it a richer place to be. But that again has to be done by a group of people, and then you want to. Which is something that Jeff and I were talking about is, social tagging as it exists now tends to work on a document. Can we build tools that would say this phrase, this little bit of this, and somehow have those interact with, in this case, with the underlying XML or what have you, so that you have a reliable and fixed reference that resource can work with. So if I'm going to tag this as a place, or that it'll a tool that does that and knows what it's talking about in terms of the structure of the document. This sounds like it's kind of a common problem. That's what I see.
Yeah, I
wasn't there a W3 proposal for web page annotation? Effectively for doing that kind of into a
point.
Well, no, I mean, that was one of the syntaxes, but it seems like there was actually some proposal that kind of emerged and then just sat there for writing standoff annotation of discrete chunks that you couldn't point a URL at because it wasn't indexed necessarily.
In this case, you...
How about Zotero in this respect?
What's the smallest unit of citation? We were just talking about...
You can add your own scripts to it to make sure it works the way you want it. make sure it understands the milestones as we understand them. Unfortunately, not the way the CPS system works, but so those milestones, the FOOP 125, will then be how it's referred to in your Zotero annotations as well. And make those and then add that secondary to refer article.
We have a version of Perseus Latin Greek under Philo that's currently in the shop, but it's actually looked at the site you like and through Zotero, so it explores object level kinds of things. Well, logic has an object addressing level. It's an OCHA object, so it doesn't necessarily always map the kinds of citation schemes that you get in the classics, but it would get you fairly close in terms of small chunks. And the idea is that you could use whatever social tagging do it. And the other thing that's on the boil is a similarity analyzer that can actually propose links between these smaller low-level chunks, and then you get social tagging to assess the validity, the utility, and the type of these kinds of links. That's actually the public grant proposal 3 days ago, and the public version would be the Perseus data. Just sort of run that experiment and see what happens. We had to remove from the proposal my discourse that says, well, this sounds like a recipe for chaos, but I think that in fact, just small communities are self-selecting, and there is a self-reinforcing thing about taxonomies that it won't be as chaotic as it could be. There is no ontology for either typifying little bits of chunk, chunks of text, or intertextualizations. There is, in the French tradition, the I'm going to forget the name, the Cephalis, which is actually a database of people building topoids. Looking at topoi in French, they block copy little chunks of text. But I don't think I've ever seen anyone do it on a typology of intertextual relationships. But we know it works from certain experimental stuff, and so the Latin and Greek stuff in Perseus is going to be the public version of this. We're going to have it in English and in French. You can't do away with French, otherwise it would be a more interesting experiment. So, no, you're absolutely right. You've got the low level object address.
There's at least one startup that I've just flew across that is doing social annotation of web-facing documents.
That's the reason why we're marrying this to Google logic. We already have a hierarchical object mapping scheme in place. So right, almost zero cost. All we did was for each object, we just put in some double core right in the head, and then a little object identifier. And then all we would need to do is have a permanent kind of object identifier. And then that would be off the races. You could actually map this pretty quickly. So we think as an experiment, that you could have 2 weeks to put up the first experiment, so hopefully it would have some. Hopefully.
I think one of the things that made the pseudo online successful is that there's something very particularly satisfying about the degree of ownership of your little paperwork to be translated. and I think the term argument, I guess Kenny Morrell talked about micro micro acknowledgement or citation of the word. But, and I don't think it's about that. I don't think people are going around with t-shirts and I translate this pseudo entry. I just think it feels particularly rewarding to do that. And, I think when we start thinking about this other kind of social annotation, it is worth thinking about I imagine there's a certain level at which, below which you don't have that same kind of satisfaction of having done a thing. Then it just becomes repetitive labor.
The social annotation appeals to greed. I mean, the thing I love about it is that it appeals to greed. I want to remember this chunk, or I want to remember this. So there's no altruism involved in social tagging business at all. And so in some ways, it's the perfect private greed and common good that come out of it. So I think you have more collaborative spirit in the SUDA and to get an online collaborative translation about the project. Also, people do like to be associated with this as well. They're happy to announce it.
And I mean, it was completely trivial, but to have this emailing of the entry of the month or whatever it was, whoever thought of doing that, I remember when you know, this happened to graduate students of mine, that this was sort of, you know, piped out to the world, they were thrilled, right? So here's your second year graduate student, has this 5-line entry on Brasidas or whoever, and that's great.
Because the pseudo online would have been more fun and successful if somebody hadn't taken all the nasty obscenities and, you know, hoarded them as his own. No
private
pornographic collection. Or scatological terms left for anybody else. Professor Skate was there.
Is that something, Gary? Is that proper?